watch the fireworks, you open a portal to another dimension. Well, John Hutchison is about to tell you here on Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. Now, John Hutchison is one of the most controversial researchers in the world. Decades ago, he reported the discovery of a new effect producing random levitations, molecular rearrangements, and what some have called an open portal to another dimension. It's now known as the Hutchison effect. I've seen video footage of this. It's been on several TV shows, and it's one of the weirdest things I have ever seen in my life. Trust me, that's saying a lot. He is a mysterious figure based in Toronto, and I'm extremely excited to say, John Hutchison, welcome to Speaking of Strange.
Well, thank you for having me on. Oh, one thing, I'm in New Westminster.
Oh, okay.
I'm not in Toronto.
You used to be in Toronto, right?
No, my partner's in Toronto.
Oh, okay. That's what it is. Well, very well. And, you know, I've heard your name for so many years, spoken almost like a wizard's name, and I relish the opportunity to ask you questions personally about such an amazing concept. But first off, let's start with the basics. Please give us your description of what you do.
Well, what do I do? That's in a nutshell, really.
Yeah.
I'll try my best for you. Well, I do a lot of different things. I'm into engineering and rescuing old Navy equipment and surplus and building machinery. And one of my interests was building a lot of Nikola Tesla's machines.
Ah, yes.
And in doing so, back in the late 70s, I discovered some unusual effects that were happening within my work area, and there was random movements of things. Coupled with electrostatic generators,
yeah,
it became rather interesting to a lot of other folks that started to promote it to U.S. Army Intelligence and Security Command folks. And then from there, I guess I gave many, many demonstrations of these strange effects, which were levitation and metal turning into jelly and portals opening up and all that neat and wild and wonderful stuff.
Well, now, what were the apparatus that you used for these effects to become apparent? In terms of, say, electrostatic generators, did you use Van de Graaffs or Wimshurst, or what else did you have?
Well, it was mostly Van de Graaff generators I was using at the time, along with Tesla coils and RF generation equipment.
Mm-hmm. And you, would you just turn these on and see what random effects would occur, or was there some system that you used in order to make sure you had the correct dynamics?
Well, at first it was an accidental discovery, and then later on I worked with groups of threes of these machines.
Mm-hmm.
And found the effects were more active. So I was researching it, going into it very deep. And a lot of it depends on very fine engineering standards for a lot of these machines. And everything seems to be geometric in patterns.
Yeah.
And threes and that too.
Well, now tell us about the very first time that you experienced this extraordinary phenomenon.
Well, that would have been, well, a number of years ago, of course, but it was when I had the lights out, I started to hear, like, noises, banging sounds and things like that. So I turned the lights on and started seeing chunks of plastic moving around and banging against cabinets and stuff like that. And at that time, my landlord's son and I, we would throw objects into the field, and some of these objects would come flying back at us. It was more of a fun thing at the time, and then word leaked out to various scientists. It started to come down and take photographs and film, and eventually that led into the U.S. government guys who set me up in a laboratory in North Vancouver, where we gave about 4 months of demonstrations to Colonel Alexander and his team from Los Alamos National Laboratories. But the effects were so random that they really, well, Colonel Alexander says it's PK when he appears on TLC TV, but maybe he's just protecting me. I don't know. But later on, we presented it to McDonnell Douglas Aerospace Corporation, who let it go unclassified. So so I have copies of all that stuff. But they downgraded by putting PK on it. And then the Canadian government, the Director of Scientific Technical Intelligence, they did their tests, and to this day it's still a matter of national security. Other than that, I gave many demonstrations to various groups that came and gone over the years. I think about 750 demonstrations, the last being for Chinese TV and National Geographic Television and Film. That should air sometime, I think, I guess in the fall. Hopefully.
Oh, I'm looking forward to seeing that. Now, after all these years of experimentation, currently, what is the best explanation for how this works?
There's a lot of theories out there, and theories are theories, of course. The explanation, I think, is that it's tapping into another dimension and also utilization of zero-point energy.
Mm-hmm.
Giving it all the energy it needs, at a distance from the equipment, by the way, to produce a gravity shield effect and to create these metals to turn into jelly.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, when people see what they describe as ghosts, do you think it relates to this effect?
It could to some of my neighbors. I mean, there was a lot of complaints going on in the city hall.
Right.
And the mayor had to intervene and tell city council, well, it's this mad scientist and new Westminster kind of thing. So he let it pass, but there was a lot of problems with that. I did a Fox TV show, Ghost, Best Evidence Caught on Tape, where they were talking about it as ghost, really. But
mm-hmm.
I could say that.
Well, now, have you or anybody else ever been harmed by these effects when they occur?
None of my teams or the other teams have ever been harmed.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Nancy O'Donnelly there, she was a little scared when her hair started floating in the air for National Geographic. And she said, they all stopped and said, are we going to be okay?
I'm sure.
I said, yeah, I feel you're going to be okay. I don't think there's any real harm going to happen here. So they continued their filming. It's kind of funny, but I teased Nancy about that. How's your hair doing?
Well, now, how does this affect the mind or the brain activity of people who come close to this field?
Well, I think myself, I tended to get a little addicted to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would need like a little bit of this energy to feel good, and then over the years it sort of dissipated. But mostly we're all in extremely good health. All my partners and other scientists that were involved in this are doing very well, health-wise.
Well, would you say that when you turn on all these machines and create this effect that it may actually warp time in some way?
Oh, I'm sure of that. There's enough evidence that from the German teams that investigated the metal samples, that the metal samples seem to be somehow accelerating in time or slowed down in time, according to their testing. And that's the Max Planck Institute in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So some evidence there in regards to the actual samples seem to indicate a time variation.
Mm-hmm. And how many people over the years have documented this?
I forget now.
Yeah, dozens and dozens of people, I guess, huh?
Well, there's folks from Germany that really went into it very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's U.S. Army Intelligence and those guys. Who else now? We had McDonnell Douglas. We had quite a number of different folks coming in and out over the years. And I guess the main documentator is George in Toronto, who's kept all his notes in that. He's going to be writing a book about his adventures with yours truly.
I'm sure, yeah.
It's going to be one of those things I'll probably read and laugh and fall on the floor again with.
Well, when you mentioned zero-point energy coming from the vacuum, is this something that we might be able to use to help solve the quote-unquote energy crisis we have right now?
That effect itself has been around for a long time, and nobody's really done anything with it except Dr. Franklin Mead, who patented a device for collecting it in 1996, December 31.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe IBM has the rights to it. And I think that this energy has an amazing potential for an alternative energy source if it was taken on seriously, but it seems that nobody wants to really accept the military for their small energy storage devices, DARPA's group for space flight and nuclear monitoring, but nothing really. I don't see anything yet.
Well, in what ways have governments stifled your research?
Well, that's probably because I don't want to cooperate too much with them. I mean, I have a whole new groupies in the U.S. Pentagon. They want me to do more demonstrations and probably get some funding. But at this point in time, I'd like to just do my own network TV show and kind of, like, interview people doing interesting things just like myself. I know a lot of scientists who are. And also replicating a little bit of these effects I'm doing, too.
Well, how easy is it to replicate them?
It's not too hard to do. I let it go for a number of years, and then I got re-inspired myself here for National Geographic TV and Film, and also the Disclosure Project people, plus a Chinese group, and I just let her go.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't care if police showed up or there was a bunch of problems. I just let her rip. And I found that actually to set it up properly and pre-testing, it took me about a week to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And once I fired it up, then the tests were quite good.
Well, now, at one point, you had some of your equipment confiscated. Is that right?
Yes, that was the main big lab that I had in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I was actually in Germany. It was to be shipped over to Germany, but the Canadian government decided to take it and make it disappear. Although they tried that, it did make the front page of the newspapers. Because some hermit mm-hmm. who lived in the forest area where they had the lab stored reported it to the Vancouver newspapers.
Well, why do you think they wanted to confiscate your work?
Who knows what the Canadian government thinks about it anyway? I don't know. They just thought it might have fallen into foreign hands.
Yeah.
That was one of the stories. A lot of different stories.
Yeah. Well, we have to take our first break, but when we come back from this break, I'm going to ask my guest, John Hutchison, more about how to, you know, reproduce these effects, because I myself would love to have the opportunity to create any one of these effects that he has attained in my own personal little laboratory, because, you know, we're talking about the type of technology here that is really magic in terms of our current understanding of technology. It's something that pushes forth all the boundaries we can imagine right now in our current understanding of physics. You can learn more about John Hutchison by going to the link at speakingofstrange.com to HutchisonEffectOnline.com. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and my interview will continue right after this here on Speaking of Strange. About the Hutchison effect, I am Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange. You can find out more by going to speakingofstrange.com. I've wanted to talk to John Hutchison for a long time. It's a wonderful pleasure to speak with him. And so, John, you know, I mean, my facilities are nothing compared to what I'm sure you have, but I have some electrostatic generators, some Tesla coils and things. Is there any way that I could reproduce any of these effects? Could you give me any advice on that?
Well, I'll do my best. If you somehow observe the sparks in darkness and see how the sparks run in that, it's kind of like how I did it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I advanced into intermixing RF signals into the field and magnetic fields.
Now, what sparks are you talking about, from the spark gap or from the electrostatic generators?
Oh, both of them, actually. Spark gap and the Tesla coils.
Okay.
That's really neat stuff to watch, and sometimes it doesn't even make sense how those sparks tend to run from the Van de Graaff generator. They tend to not want to jump a spark gap sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
That intrigued me. And doing that, you'll notice maybe certain things that are kind of strange, like a white, foggy kind of thing that happens that fills the entire room. I noticed that when I was building a Tesla coil and pre-testing it, that this white fog seemed to appear around the Tesla coil, and I walked away from it and it disappeared. When you're doing that, you're sort of getting into it. And I went into this quite a bit, and doing it was a pure accident. I wasn't really planning into producing an anti-grav machine or anything like that. It was just pure accidental discovery. And then I thought, well, gee, everybody wants to see this thing in operation all the time, so I better fine-tune it. I had to do a lot of lathe work, engineering, and studying up more on corona suppression. Eventually, I got it to work reasonable. And I found that large masses of metal were very effective. So I think that on a subatomic level, that somehow these fields were taking out large masses of metal, some other thing. I'm not sure yet what it is, but I would feel it probably on the subatomic level.
So after all these years, even you don't know exactly how to express how to do this, then you just sort of tinker with it? Is that how it works for you?
Well, I hate the word tinkering, but I love the word Blue Ridge Mountains. But anyway, okay, I work with it, and if I'm not sure of it's something, I'll study up on it.
Uh-huh.
I've been taught by a lot of old-timers about electrical mechanical engineering and that. So I'd study something up and work on it and then incorporate it into the machines.
So if I take, say, 3 Van de Graaffs and 3 Tesla coils and 3 RF generators and put them in a room and turn them all on at the same time, I have the conditions set. Is that right?
You're getting there, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, what would be the next step after getting all these things turned on?
The next step would be probably getting a lot of insulators.
Mm-hmm.
And making toroidal coils and wrap it around the insulators.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I started doing. And then I made what you call a spiral spark gap, which is like a spiral, but the spark jumps around in the spiral up to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had also a direct current DC pulsating gap at 20,000 volts DC. And that seemed to enhance the effects more. And as I moved on to other lab locations, I incorporated larger transformers,
mm-hmm.
which were weighed around 1,500 pounds, X-ray transformers, and really went into that in the mid-80s, where I was able to invite anybody down and give a demonstration, like for Canadian news people or whoever. And at that time, it got pretty reliable, although the equipment itself is getting pretty massive for, well, in consideration of national laboratories, I guess it's pretty small, but it was around 15 tons. And the last great experiment that was very predictable at 15 major effects per hour,
mm-hmm.
5 to 15.
Well, now, a lot of your critics have said that, you know, you're just too vague when it comes to specifying how other people can reproduce what you have done. How do you respond to that?
It depends on the person. Now, I can talk to a physicist at Eco Communication about it.
Mm-hmm.
And we compare notes in that, like Dr. Hal Pudoff and others. But for me, to keep answering the same kind of question with many different folks, it gets a little tiresome. So I suggest that, I guess George Hathaway was putting out a book and going into detail that way, which is probably the best thing. Mm-hmm. Because I can go into, let's say, well, you have to have so many thicknesses in a waveguide, because I advanced into microwave technology, too,
mm-hmm.
in the late 80s, where I really was getting good results. And getting away from the old spark gaps, which were very unreliable, I got into vacuum tubes,
mm-hmm.
which produced better effects, more stable. Because in a large system like that, open system like that, you get environmental conditions like humidity, and that causing a lot of problems.
Well, you know, a lot of your critics say that you're just an outright hoaxer. I mean, how do you feel about those people when they make those accusations towards you?
No, I don't care what they say. I have no... It's their opinion, and they're right to say that.
And why do you think is they don't understand you? I mean, what is the number one thing that they're missing that you would like to make sure people understand so that they know that you have such legitimacy here?
Well, I guess the government tapes that are still under in matter of national security.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to get that stuff released. I guess it's probably people that are new to what I'm doing, because there's so many people that viewed it and test all the metal samples and that there's always new people coming around and say, wow, that crazy nut doing that kind of stuff, it sounds far out there.
So yeah, sure.
I can't blame them. Gee, you know, I'm a bit of a critic myself.
Yeah, yeah.
When it comes to a lot of these free energy claims, I become a little jaded, but...
Well, do you feel that when this effect is happening that your own consciousness has any interaction with it, or do you think that that is irrelevant?
No, I really think it does. I think everybody has those talents when they interact into what they're doing, such as painting or machine tool work. If their mind and is into it, of course, they're connected.
Mm-hmm.
They really believe in that. As far as the mind itself manipulating time and space, well, I think that that's possible through psychotronics.
Yep.
But I'm not aware of myself really being that good at manipulating stuff.
So there's no way that you can say, okay, here's how to do this, A, B, C, D, E. I mean, is it too complex to simplify it according to a plan of steps?
Not really, no. If I sat down for a long period of time, let's say, with a group and wrote out a manual for it, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many details that I have to go over, such as KVA, voltage ratings, voltage pressures, corona rings, materials, metals, RF, reflected power, and all that neat stuff. You have to go through it from one end to the other. But nobody really has sat me down and decided to make a manual out of the stuff. And I really had no inspiration to do it myself. And I was told off by scientists, well, you don't keep records or notes or anything. I said, no. Because I was never, really, to be honest, I was never brought up as a scientist.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is your life's work in a way, so why not create some sort of a manual like that so that the rest of us will have all that you've worked for after you're gone?
Gone? Me? No, I'm going to be 150 years old somewhere down perhaps in North Carolina, I hope.
Yeah. In 200 years then, how about that?
That'd be cool. I'm into life extension research too, so
Uh-huh.
That's one of my main interests is life extension and doing other projects for film companies.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they will call me up and say, can you build the Ark of the Covenant? No, I'll build it for them, and we get results. But I'm hoping that George Hathaway will have all this data that he can put down, because he's been working on this book for quite a while. He's been the main documentator of the actual guts of the machinery. To be honest, I'm just too lazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate writing. I hate typing.
Right. But obviously you can understand, I guess, why so many people are frustrated when they try to reproduce this. Because you have discovered something that, according to your reports, is so monumental that everybody would love to know how to do this. And do you understand the frustration that so many people have?
Oh, I can believe that. Although there's a few scientists that have replicated parts of the Hutchins effect, and that's Ken Shoulders, who presented that work to MIT last May 21, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
A few scientists have replicated some of the results. The Black Ops people, I don't know. They won't talk.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the ones that we showed it to them and demonstrated it to them. And they might even have it running and going right now. I can't tell you for sure.
No.
I know that Nick Cook of Change Defense Weekly investigated that aspect of it and found that Lockheed Martin was doing some interesting stuff with it. It aired on TLC, but...
Yeah. Well, we have to take a break, and I want you to know, listeners, you can go to speakingofstrange.com to find a link to John Hutchison's website. That is Hutchison Effect Online. His last name is spelled Hutchison, HutchisonEffectOnline.com. And when we come back from this break, I'll talk more with John about what he has done in the laboratory, as well as whether or not there may be places on this earth where these conditions are naturally present, maybe places like the Bermuda Triangle. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange. So you can listen to it at least for a few weeks afterward. And I'm talking right now with John Hutchison. He is an engineer, a physicist, an experimenter, an inventor who is credited with the Hutchison effect. You can go to speakingofstrange.com to learn more about it. And so, John, when somebody like a representative from National Geographic says they are coming to your facility and they want to have a demonstration, what steps do you go through to prepare so that you have the highest chances of being able to show them the Hutchison effect?
Oh, boy. I love your bumper music, by the way.
Thank you.
I actually get very busy. I pre-test all the different equipments and make sure they're in proper running order.
Mm-hmm.
And then I interconnect the different rack cabinets to the other rack cabinets and then do pre-testing.
Mm-hmm.
And I let it sit and say, yeah, that looks good. It seems to be working a little bit there. So when they show up, I explain to them, this is all these cables and that, and this is how I guess we'll have to proceed here. So they're quite willing to accommodate the problem with all the cables, and we get on to filming.
So in terms of your actual setup, and of course that's obviously what I keep questioning you about, because I'm hoping that I can reproduce it myself in some way, and I'm trying to learn as much about that. Can you give me any more tips in terms of how I could reproduce the Hutchison effect?
Well, I'd recommend looking at the threshold breakover of high voltage around 400,000 volts.
Uh-huh.
That's another little secret. Through interferometers. Interferometering that and phase shifting.
Uh-huh.
Those are some of the good things to play with, and also magnetrons. If you can pulse a magnetron mechanically, then you get some interesting results from that, too.
Okay. Did you know an engineer named Charles Yost?
Oh, Charles, yeah. We were in communication for a long time. He wrote up Electric Spacecraft Journal.
Oh, yeah. He was a good friend of mine, and, you know, he just passed away last year, of course. And I know that he was really interested in your effect, and he mentioned your name many times. And I was just curious as to what your relationship with Charles may have been.
Oh, a lot of letter writing in those days and phone calls. And he actually published some very good stuff for me. He took some of the diagrams I wrote out for him, and they made very fine diagrams and published it in the Electric Spacecraft Journal.
Yeah.
Good relationship, a real nice friend.
Oh, yeah, he was something else. I really have a lot of admiration for him, and we lost a good one when he died last year. So
that was a sad story, I know. It was kind of sad. I have all his back issues of Electric Spacecraft Journal.
Fantastic publication. Well, now, how do you feel about the possibility that there are places on Earth where the conditions for the Hutchison effect naturally occur, such as maybe the Bermuda Triangle, where people report these paranormal events all the time?
Well, I've been approached by many film companies in the last year, especially about 12 of them, who did come here and videotape stuff and talk with me and that, and I feel it's a close relationship in some aspects, but I keep saying to them that, no, there's the famous Booker Bay incident. I got a report from Booker Bay, Australia, and it was covered by Dr. Hal Pidoff, Paul Devereaux, and they covered that along with Mr. Harrington and Channel 4 of the UK, where they actually could see, like, people being pushed around by themselves and strange lights, metal melting on its own, and that's looking at the report, I was quite impressed and was rather surprised that this aspect in Booker Bay was not more fully, well, I guess covered by Discovery Channel networks and that, too. You seem to be really focused on the Bermuda Triangle, but, well, it's got its own unique mysteries.
Oh, yeah. And so many of those variables, I guess, that are so significant. And, you know, I'm looking at the chat board, and I keep getting the question here, why has no one ever been hurt around this? And I asked you that earlier, but would you like to expound on that a bit, why nobody's ever been hurt in the proximity of these experiments?
Well, yeah, nobody's been hurt. We're all pretty healthy, and we took very strong precautions by setting up shielding and everything else you could think of.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the colonel and his team putting up, like, sheets of aluminum mm-hmm. over the walls, and I said, I don't feel that this is safe yet, so we put steel across and that, and then eventually we started our testing. So I'm very cautious with it. Nobody's been really hurt, although a lot of their possessions have been smashed apart.
I'm sure.
A lot of people are a little angry at us for doing this. They related it to something else, like some kind of steam hammer or some other strange machinery that we're operating in our complexes. So they leave nasty notes on the door, and the police would sometimes come around. But it would just say, oh, well, we'll turn the machine off kind of thing.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point, because I talked weeks ago about the fact we were going to have you on this program, and believe it or not, I mean, a lot of listeners wrote to me saying that they would actually boycott this program tonight if I have you on. They just said this guy is a nutcase, and I was sort of shocked by the fact that there are so many people who have a strong negative reaction to your work, and you obviously can see how I responded to that. I have you on anyway, but I mean, why do you feel that people have, in some cases, such a negative reaction to you and your work?
I don't know what people's are. I never get anything like that in emails or anything like that. I get usually 100 or a couple hundred emails a day, and they're all positive.
Yeah.
Art Bell said the same thing. He said, John, I get all these emails in about you, and when you ever have, you know, get you on the show. I don't know who these people are, but maybe it's the Black Ops people.
Maybe.
I don't know. But nobody said it to me in emails or phone calls or on the street or anything, or no threats or anything, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was really surprised by it. In fact, I have never had that amount of reaction to any guest saying, don't have this person on. So, I mean, that in itself lends some possible credibility to the fact that you're tapping into something that some people may not want released. You know, it seemed quite suspicious to me.
Well, to be honest, there's people making a lot of money off of this that I don't want to name names. They're high up there. And they own their own countries kind of people. And I really, you know, they just, there's a lot at stake, I guess.
Yeah.
I can't prove anything, but there's a lot of talk going on about that.
Yeah. Well, it seems like that the work that you are doing is so important and so significant that it could explain so many mysteries, whether it's ghostly activity or alien technology or psychic phenomena. And going back to what I was saying earlier, I mean, I can see why so many people are frustrated by not being able to directly reproduce this. I'm one of them, of course. I haven't really tried yet, and I don't know exactly what all it would entail, but... I mean, is there any way that you can pass along any advice to a listener who has the skills and the technology to perhaps have a chance at witnessing any small, tiny little aspect of the Hutchison effect?
Well, I would suggest to them that they go back into old engineering, old electrical mechanical engineering, study Tesla, Steinmetz, Henry Hertz, all those old timers that were actually doing unusual things in that time period, which history, unfortunately, kind of buried them.
Mm-hmm.
The modern stuff out here now.
But you can't lay out any kind of a brief step-by-step plan for how this can be witnessed and proven.
Well, I would recommend with machinery?
Yes.
Well, I'd recommend getting involved with electrostatics, understanding that, along with Tesla machinery.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're on your road. You're on a road there that will carry you into some minor effects that will happen.
Okay, we got to take another break now. When we come back from this break, I will wrap up my conversation with John Hutchison here on Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and we'll return right after this.
You're listening to an exclusive News Radio 570 WWNC podcast. You can listen live, check out the latest news, get host info, downloads, and more at WWNC.com.
Saturday night, wrapping up my conversation with John Hutchison, joining us from Canada. You can learn more about him by going to HutchisonEffectOnline.com. There is a link at SpeakingOfStrange.com. And, John, how do you spend your time these days?
Oh, good heavens. The television people keep me activated.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
I've replicated the Ark of the Covenant, and we demonstrated in Vancouver here. Great big balls of lightning and stuff coming out of it.
Wow. When will we see that?
I'm hoping it's going to air anytime on TLC. It's a one-hour TLC TV special. It was done by Blue Book Films.
Okay.
What else have I got involved with here? Also, the Philadelphia Experiment. I was approached by Ron in New York, Ron Maloney, to do the Philadelphia Experiment. And my ship has not come in yet. It's a model ship, 4 feet long. And it was supposed to arrive here a while ago, and I'm starting to think maybe the ship sunk, but
right.
Maybe it'll come, and then we're going to try and make it disappear. A 3D graphic foam and that in Vancouver here, close to Stargate SG-1 Productions with lollipops and that. We're going to try that, and that's just keep me busy, basically, is production.
Yeah.
And someday I'd like to get out there and interview other scientists who are doing actually interesting things just like I am.
Well, now, do you have any advice that you'd like to pass along to other researchers who want to follow up on your discoveries?
No, it depends on the researcher. I mean, they have to realize that high voltage is extremely dangerous, number one.
Mm-hmm.
So they should get a briefing in high voltage, how to handle it. Then work yourself slow into it, like with Tesla coils, Vandegraaff generators, and eventually get into RF. But just make sure that you bleed that RF into dummy loads so you don't cause problems with the FCC in that. So you got to be cautious in that way, too, a little bit.
Yeah, I can see why. And, well, you know, I said earlier, I've been fascinated by your work for a long time. And I can't really say I've learned much from this interview, though. Is there a reason that you are sort of holding your cards close to the chest, or is it just that there are so many variables you can't communicate exactly what you're doing?
There's so many variables with this thing, this technology.
Yeah?
I mean, I could go into hours of explanations of magnetrons, magnetron currents, grid currents, and that kind of thing that you have to tune up. Magnetron universal power supplies and all that neat stuff are high voltage breakover threshold type tech.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a class in a way, which maybe I'd be good at.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure if you opened a class, you'd have a lot of people who would want to know exactly what you're doing. And, I mean, what are the chances that when you are gone that the secret will go to the grave with you?
Oh, no, no. I'm very open about everything. I've been open to the U.S. government guys about everything and to the Canadian government guys, the German groups, the Japanese groups. Very open. And I don't mind. They can have it. I was happy actually to get to... I was very happy to give it to the U.S. government back in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's just the Soviet Union is doing something like that. Well, they were worried about that aspect of it. So... I was happy to give it to the free world, and I think they got it.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think that the kind of work that you have done is valuable because we know that these complex field interactions should produce some amazing things, and as frustrating as that may be for those of us who would like to reproduce them, it's... I often say science is designed to solve the simplest mysteries first, and now we're getting into some of the really bizarre stuff that's hard to reproduce, and I can see why that even though there are people out there who may say that what you know you are doing is a hoax or whatever, I don't know personally, but I do think that it's good that people like yourself are out there doing these experiments, and I certainly am happy that you are continuing your work. In fact, if I ever make my way up in your neck of the woods, would you be perhaps open to giving me a demonstration?
If I'm still here, you're most welcome. I put out a welcome for a couple of months now to anybody who wants to come around and take a look at it.
Really?
Ah. Oh, yeah. It's on my forum there on the Internet. But yeah. Really, I think, to be honest with all this stuff, the U.S. government guys and other high-tech guys have the tech, and they're already replicating it.
Yeah.
For the ordinary folks out there, it can be done. I mean, some simple experiments like with lifters, you can start with those too.
Yeah, that's true. Lifters are fascinating things. I've had a great time experimenting with some of those as well. And unfortunately, we are out of time, but I tell you, there's so much we could discuss, and perhaps I can have you back at some point, but please keep us updated on your research, and I truly appreciate you taking the time to be my guest tonight, John.
Well, I'm very honored to be with you, sir.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And there you go, my friends. That was John Hutchison. HutchisonEffectOnline.com is his website. That's HUTCHISON. HutchisonEffectOnline.com. And you can find a link through Speaking of Strange. com. And, you know, it's like I say, I didn't learn very much from that interview, but it could just be a matter of too many variables. It could be something else, but at least now you have heard the man yourself and you can draw your own conclusions. Next week, I'm going to talk with Daniel Cohen, my favorite author growing up, as well as Sarah Harrison of the Asheville Paranormal Society. That's it for this edition of the show. I'm Joshua P. Warren with producer Agnes Cheek, and I'd like to thank our webmaster, Robert McGee, and Brian Hall, Forrest Connor, Micah Hanks, John Anderson, Brian Irish, Dr. Al Prophet, and Mobius. It's Speaking of Strange, where the unusual becomes usual. We'll be here again next Saturday. In the meantime, come to speakingofstrange.com and be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter at the site for the latest updates. Thanks for listening, and